Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I'm your host, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow me on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Michael Kist, my usual co-host, again, not with me today. He's still heading down in Florida. They're still cleaning up from that whole Irma nonsense. But the hope is that he will be back with us on Wednesday, and we're looking forward to that. Glad that Mike game through everything okay. Family's good. Everything is wonderful. But thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. In Mike's stead, I have the man, Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon, NFL Bleacher Report 1000, Locked On Patriots. Ex-lawyer. He's a stalwart in gardening Twitter. There's too much stuff. Mark, what am I missing? You've got everything going on, man.
I think you got everything, but look, let's be honest here. You don't really miss Michael that much, do you?
Not even a little bit. Mark, he bullies me. I don't know if you listen. He's very mean. He's very cruel. He makes fun of me whenever I misplace names, which I do roughly three times an episode. And then I predicted that the Cowboys, God forbid, win the division again. And he's been yelling at me for that for about a week now.
Well, he was yelling at you and I last night about handwriting on Twitter. So I've got beef with him on that, too. Yeah. And then he shows a sample of his handwriting, and he looks like a sociopath.
It looks like a font off of a computer. I swear he got that image off the internet. That was some calligraphist who did that. That was freaky. Yeah.
That was freaky. That's a little scary. I'm a little worried about you, Benjamin. I hope you're going to be okay with him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, fortunately, I've always had too much self-esteem. So I'm just, you know, I'm staying above the red line there. But okay, the handwriting thing. I don't know if you're like this, because you've got pretty bad handwriting too. But I've got the whole, like, this is my handwriting for when I'm taking notes. And then this is my other handwriting for when I know somebody has to read this. So I have to make it look legible. Do you have the two handwriting?
No, I don't. And what's crazy is, you know, you mentioned the fact that I am an ex-lawyer. If you've ever seen me sign my name, it is literally what barely looks like an M and then a line and then a swoop over the top. That is it. Like, you cannot tell. Like, my wife, who's also a lawyer, she's like, you can't sign your name like this anymore. People aren't going to believe it's you. Like, number one. And number two, like, people can forge this signature. You look like an idiot. But that's how I sign my name. And, you know, it's the same thing. And, you know, I took notes on, you know, Carson Wentz's game because I knew we were going to talk about it. And I'm hoping I can still read them. Like, I think I can. But
no, absolutely. My notes are always, like, code protected because nobody else can read them but me. And so I never have to worry about, like, people cheating on exams or reading over my shoulder or anything. It's illegible. It's the perfect defense, man.
It is the perfect defense. Although, I was impressed when you nailed the note that I posted out on Twitter last night from that first game. What was it, second game? You nailed it, though. You knew exactly what it was. And everybody else was like, what is – I can't even read this.
Dude, I will post a picture of, like, my notes from one of these shows, and I will show you. You'll understand why I was able to read your handwriting, because I'm not trying to brag here, but I'm pretty sure I've got you beat as far as Dr. Chicken Scratch goes.
Oh, fantastic. Love it. I love team handwriting notes.
Absolutely. And that's all for our episode today. It's just about handwriting.
Cool. You were fooled. Locked On Handwriting.
Either way, we're talking Carson Wentz today. Mark is one of the best quarterback eyes there is in the business. I have lived in his first sound videos that are on YouTube. They help an incredible amount. Well-detailed, short, you know, bite-sized videos. They're great stuff. And so definitely check those out at Inside the Pylon's YouTube channel. So Mark's one of the guys that you can really trust when it comes to quarterback. And especially when it comes to Carson Wentz, we do like our level-headed analysts because sometimes we get people a little bit entrenched in their opinions when it comes to Carson Wentz and his quarterback play. So talking just specifically, before we go to the first game with Washington, let's get a little bit of a scope. Let's get a little bit of a baseline. So, Mark, you were doing work on quarterbacks before the 2016 draft. I'm interested, you know, just a quick overview. What did you think of Carson Wentz coming out of North Dakota State?
You know, it's funny, you Benjamin, you said that I'm, you know, a level-headed guy. And I will sort of say at the outset that, look, Wentz is somebody that I've had a soft spot for since, like, December of 2014. Like, before anybody even knew who this kid was, I had started writing about him because I was watching – it was his, you know, his – I think it was his sophomore – maybe it was his junior year. And playoff game against – South Dakota State leads a drive in the last minutes, throws a touchdown pass on a beautiful corner out to the back of the end zone. I was like, hey, you know, this guy's pretty good. And so, you know, that summer, you know, going into, so I guess that was his junior year. You know, he had another national championship game for North Dakota State, goes into his senior year. I actually did a video with Matt Waldman that August, the night before they opened their season, you know, on the road at Montana, which was actually the first sort of college football game that year. Brett Musburger was out there, you know, at ESPN had the live broadcast on it, and North Dakota State actually lost. But, you know, even sort of around that time, I was like, you know, this is still going to be like a second day quarterback, like a third round quarterback. Like, I'm really not going to buy into him so much as a first round guy. But then he had that comeback against Northern Iowa, where, again, leads a last-minute drive, you know, made a couple of great throws during that drive. And that's when I sort of really started to buy it as well. And, you know, I'm looking at the draft scouting profile that I did on him, and there was some stuff, obviously, that we can get to, his weaknesses that people identified during the draft process. But there was some stuff that he did, some aggressive throws. That drive against Northern Iowa, he made a throw against a Tampa 2 look to a tight end right up the middle of the field on a post route where, you know, you're trailing by four. You're at home in the final minutes, and you've got to win this game. And, you know, you make an aggressive decision like that. Like, that's the type of quarterback that you need in the NFL, a guy who's willing to challenge those windows. And so when push came to shove, look, he was my quarterback two in that class behind Jared Goff, who I still think, you know, people may have written off a little bit early.
Yeah.
But I still see a lot of the things in Wentz that I liked about him coming out on the draft. I mean, from an aggressiveness standpoint, from a competitive toughness standpoint, I mean, that national championship game, that the first one he won against Illinois State, like, he had made some mistakes earlier, but he sort of comes back, and again, another last-minute drive. And we saw that sort of play out last year in his rookie season. You know, you could have looked at the Eagles sort of down the stretch and wouldn't have been surprised if they sort of rode off the season and didn't really fight down the stretch, but they did the exact opposite. I mean, this is a team that battled down the stretch. They had that couple of close losses to Baltimore and Washington, and they had that win against the Giants that, you know, prevented the Giants from clinching a playoff spot. Obviously, they win Week 17 against the Cowboys, who had already clinched, so can't really put too much stock in that game. I don't think Wentz played, but still, you saw this team fight down the stretch, and that came from the top, and I think that's part of the reason you saw this guy get elected a captain. And so from a competitive toughness standpoint, from some of those aggressive throws that he made, I liked him. Obviously, there were weaknesses, which we'll get to, but, you know, he was a kid that I really sort of liked coming out of college, and the more and more I watched, the more and more I liked what I saw.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think a lot of those things you were speaking of, the competitive toughness and the aggressiveness, you know, Philadelphia really identifies with Carson Wentz, and it's a lot to do with just the nature of this city and the way that we tend to treat our players. You know, we're loyal to a fault and we'll turn on you quick, but if we identify with you, if you really embody our city and you exemplify what we believe in, you know, we'll fight for you thick and thin. And that's kind of what's happening here with Carson Wentz. You can see that the city and the team has kind of started rallying around this North Dakota State kid, you know what I mean?
And so, yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for that, Benjamin. And, you know, sort of that, you know, you look at Philadelphia and it's sort of like the blue-collar fan base, you know, guys, you know, fans like guys that sort of come in lunch pail type mentality and come in and do their jobs and, you know, fight and compete, you know, day in and day out. And I think the city has kind of bought into that. And, you know, let's not forget, coming out as a rookie, winning your first three games, beating up on the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm sure, like, made him a lot of fans in the Philadelphia area as well. And so Wentz got off to a great start with them. Obviously, tough mid-stretch as, you know, the Lane Johnson suspension, team started to sort of figure out what they were doing on offense. But again, he battled through it, you know. And, you know, I also give a lot of credit to Sean Cottrell, who writes for Inside the Pylon, writes for Bleeding Green. You know, he was sort of all over that sort of competitive toughness angle down the stretch last year. He was like, look, he's getting knocked around, but he keeps coming back. And it's easy sometimes as a quarterback from a mental standpoint, when you start getting knocked around, to sort of just cash out. To sort of just like fold up the tent and say, look, man, it's just not my year. It's not my game. It's not my drive. I'm just going to sort of check out here. But credit to Wentz, he kept fighting through that.
Yeah, and we had Matt Waldman on. You spoke about Matt when you were watching Wentz with him. We had Matt Waldman on. He spoke a little bit about what it means to be a quarterback, not only between the ears, but kind of like in the heart, you know, personality-wise and moxie-wise, you know, gumption, all those terms that we like to throw around with these guys. It's good stuff. I don't know about you. Watching Wentz week one against the Redskins, having watched him for the 16 games of his rookie season, I definitely had that impression, you know, with him standing tall in the pocket as often as he did, breaking tackles, directing traffic outside of the pocket, you know, just extending plays. I really did have that experience of him kind of being fully in charge of that offense, really running the show, kind of, you know, showing why he got that captain badge there on his jersey. So what did you think of Wentz's performance against the Redskins?
Yeah, and, you know, I'll get to that in a second, but I do sort of want to build on that point you mentioned about Matt Waldman and sort of playing the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is such a leadership component to that spot, to that job, that sometimes goes under the radar when we talk about quarterbacks. Sometimes we focus so much on stats, what happens on the field, what happens from play to play. And a lot of times, quarterbacks mean the most to their team in the huddle. When you've got 10 sets of eyes looking back at you, 10 sets of eyes that are wondering what's going to happen next. What are you going to do for this team? How are we going to get through the next drive? How are we going to convert this third down? And you've got to stand up at all of those moments. You've got to look all 10 of those guys in the eyes and convince them from play to play that what we're calling, what we're about to do is going to be successful. And sometimes it's looking those guys and being confident in the huddle. Sometimes it's like you mentioned, Benjamin, it's shrugging off a would-be sack, making a play happen. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman and maybe you get beat or you guys don't pick up a blitz and you look back and you see your quarterback makes a play anyway, you want to play for that guy. Like, right. You want to, like, put your body on the line for that guy because you know that even if you make a mistake, he's going to bail you out. You know that if you do make a mistake, he's going to come back and fight for you. He's not going to throw you under the bus, something like that. And so from a leadership standpoint, like Matt said, like we've seen play out with Carson, I think, you know, it's been very impressive. Now, to the Washington game, I thought Wentz did some things really nice in this game. And, you know, people point to, you know, the big throws. Maybe he missed the first one, which was a beautiful sort of design, little play-action Yankee concept. But you've got that deep over route and a crossing route as well underneath. And, you know, he had Torrey Smith open on that deep route. He missed it, and you know, to hear Doug Peterson tell it, his foot kind of slipped, and that led to an overthrow later in the game on the deep ball. And that's an area where Wentz has struggled going back to his days at North Dakota State. Against a junior, he missed on a lot of deep shots and, you know, tried to really work on that, getting back onto the field for his senior year. And so it's always been sort of a shakier aspect of the game. It's not one of his strengths. It's why when I was looking at him coming out of college for a team that was going to be running sort of an Air Coryell vertical type passing game, he probably wasn't the best fit. Right. But he's getting better there, you know. So I wouldn't, like, look at Philadelphia right now and say, look, they can't throw the deep ball. They can. It's just not always going to be there, but you're still going to take your deep shots. I love, sort of as the game went on, how he sped up his process in the pocket, yeah. How he started to get the ball out quicker and quicker. You know, making anticipation throws was another sort of question mark for Carson Wentz, but he was doing more and more of that as the game went on. There were a couple of plays, like he had a chance to hit Sproles in the flat at one point, and he waited to see him turn. He waited to see Sproles turn and look for the ball before throwing it. That's where you'd like to see him sort of get it out quicker, because that gives the receiver, in this case Darren Sproles, a chance to get more yardage after the catch, because the longer you wait, the more likely the defense sort of collapses on it. But then you get into sort of that third quarter, that fourth quarter, and he's throwing those deep curl routes, those seven stop routes, and the ball starting to come out at the break. Like, he hit Alshon Jeffrey on one of those. I think he hit Aguilar on one of those as well, where, you know, it's a deep throw down the field. You've got to get the ball out into a narrow throwing window, and he's getting the ball out right when the receiver's making his break, so it's timed up well, good placement and velocity. So I think sort of as the game went on and as he sort of settled in to what they were doing on offense, you started to see some development in those areas that were a little bit of a question mark for him when he was in college.
Absolutely, and I think for sure if I had to identify that best trait for Wentz in the Washington game, for me it's got to be just intermediate throwing in general. I won't even go so far as to say, you know, placement or accuracy or velocity, but just the entire illustrated picture, the way that, you know, we saw so many of Wetz's throws in the first year go, like, you know, from 0 to 10 yards down the line of scrimmage. And now I thought we saw a lot more work from the 10 to 19 range, working that over route with Zach Ertz, you know, working those deep curls, getting Alshon Jeffrey involved. The intermediate placement, I thought, was very, very impressive. And that speaks well to, like, building on those levels and stressing a defense vertically.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, another thing that stood out to me is third down success rate.
Oh, yeah. We talked about it on the last pod, too. Yeah.
And, you know, as a quarterback in this league, as an offense, you've got to stay on the field. You've got to convert third downs because you've got to stay on the field. You've got to keep the defense on the sideline. You've got to keep their defense on the field. You've got to extend drives to turn, you know, drives into points, hopefully 7. And to go 9 of 11 for 148 yards, 2 touchdowns, perfect passer rating, like, it's, you can't do better than that, I think, as a quarterback, particularly on the road against a division opponent. And, you know, a lot of those sort of anticipation type throws, a lot of those deeper throws came in those situations, because it's not like, look, it's not like they were converting sort of, you know, third and twos. I mean, you're talking, you know, third quarter, early, 13:35 left in the third quarter, throws that 7 stop to Torrey Smith. That's a 3rd and 10 situation where they convert that. You know, there was another one later in the game. It's a 3rd and 10. You know, they convert that as well in the fourth quarter. I mean, those are the situations where, as a defense, you expect to get off the field. And when you can't, that's sort of a backbreaker on the defensive side of the ball. When you can't get off the field in third and long, when the offense extends those drives with a big play, that's tough to take as a defense. And that's how teams end up winning games, is converting those situations. And the offense did a fantastic job, you know, on Sunday doing that.
Right, the third down play was same for me, particularly impressive. And it speaks to how much Carson Wentz was able to kind of save and resurrect the running game, in the sense that, you know, the numbers I had when I was charting him, I had his average third down when he was throwing the football was over 9 yards, right? Which is, that's not good. That's the opposite of good. That's pretty bad. And, yep. And the fact that, you know, on one of the first third downs of the game, he, you know, escapes the pocket and breaks the play open for a 58-yard touchdown to Nelson Agholor, that just, you know, kind of prefigures what's going to occur for the rest of the game, where Carson Wentz is going to have his back up against the wall in third and long situations, where he can be blitzed. And he saw the most blitzes in all of his 17 career games. He saw the highest percentage of blitzes against Washington. A lot of that had to do with being in such third and long situations. For him to go 9 of 11 and 2 touchdowns, I had 8 conversions, I'm pretty sure, on third down. I mean, that's poise. That's an understanding of defenses and where blitzes come from and how to attack them. And he had some big chunk yardage along third downs too. Those situational stats speak a ton to his development, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you mentioned the blitz and career high 47% of his dropbacks where he was blitzed. He went 11 of 18 for 119 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, that touchdown. I mean, that's good, too. I mean, and that's when you sort of when we went through the last draft process and I was talking about Deshaun Watson, and I mentioned, look, you know, there are situations that I look to when I'm evaluating quarterbacks from a statistical standpoint. I mean, I look at red zone, I look at third downs, and I look at what you're going to do in the fourth quarter. I mean, you could add sort of blitzes in there as well, as to what do you do in the face of the blitz. And, you know, there are two of those boxes checked from Carson Wentz in this game. Obviously, the success on third down, but the success against the blitz as well. And so, as a quarterback, you like to get blitzed. Like, let's not sugarcoat this. You want to get blitzed because that means you've got some matchup advantages you can take advantage of in the secondary. You're going to see man coverage looks. You might get, you know, a linebacker matched up on a running back in a situation like that. And so you might get Zach Ertz matched up against the linebacker if you're blitzing. You know, you might get just cover zero or something like that. You might get hot routes that are going to be open. And so you want to get blitzed as a quarterback. You know, sort of, I've always thought that the ultimate insult you can pay to a quarterback is to not bother blitzing him.
Right.
Because you don't need to. Like, he's going to make mistakes anyway. But if you're blitzing a guy, you're worried and you want to sort of get him off his spot. So, okay, fine. I'll take your best shot. So, you know, to see Wentz have the success he did on third downs against the blitz, again, like you said, it speaks very well to his development here.
All right, excellent. Let's, as much as I'd love to talk Carson Wentz strength for the next, you know, 30 minutes, let's talk a little bit to those weaknesses to which you alluded. I mean, I know that, you know, coming in for me, and I've discussed this on the pod multiple times and, you know, had more than a few arguments about it on Twitter. But for me, the consistency and the placement of Carson Wentz's deep ball, like you kind of alluded to, has always been a concern. And you spoke to the fact that, you know, it's improving and that it still gets to be a piece of this offense and that they'll still threaten safeties that way. So I guess my question for you is, given, you know, the inaccuracies you see with Carson Wentz's deep ball, talk a little bit about, you know, why you think he can't place that deep ball too well, what he might need to do going forward, and how that may affect the way that defenses play this offense.
You know, I think it's going to be a situation where he already has done enough in week one where defenses are still going to have to respect, you know, the vertical threats that they have. Torrey Smith, Aguilar is, you know, another example, and even, of course, Alshon Jeffrey, where, you know, it's not going to be like we saw games 4, 5, and 6 of last year where teams are going to be safe. You know, I don't think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to feel that they can, you know, just collapse on the short routes and the intermediate routes and just ignore the deep ball right now because Carson's not going to throw it and it's nothing to worry about because they showed enough in the passing game, even on the throws that they missed, that, look, that's something that you have to respect from what the Philadelphia Eagles are going to do on offense. From a more sort of mechanical standpoint, you know, again, it's week one still. You know, we're still getting, you know, guys are still getting, you know, sort of a feel for each other and where they're going to be on the field against different coverages, against different route concepts, you know, on deep balls and things like that. And so, you know, I think it's going to come. I'm not going to wildly overreact to some of the missed throws that we saw from Wentz or any other guy around the league for that matter. So I think sort of that deep stuff is going to come. I mean, an area of concern that I still have for Wentz, and there are a couple, but one is, you know, sort of the roller coaster ride that we sometimes see with him because, yeah. You know, you have, you know, that sort of touchdown, you know, where the timeline just explodes because it's like, oh my God, did Wentz really just do that in a good way? And then you see, you know, that botched sort of swing route to Aguilar that goes backwards and it, you know, Wentz simply missed that throw. Now that's a tough throw to make. Don't get me wrong. No, those lateral throws like smoke routes, those deeper swing routes, those aren't easy because you got to put it in the right spot. They're tough throws to make because you're like, it's sort of like not the most natural thing to do as a quarterback. You're kind of, it's almost like you're trying to turn a double play in essence because you're like sort of throwing across the body a little bit. You're not really, right. And sometimes you get a little bit cute, you get a little bit lazy with him. I think that's kind of what happened with Wentz there, and he missed that throw. And, you know, obviously the tipped pass, it went for an interception. I don't think you really put that fully on Wentz, but he's a roller coaster, and he's one of those guys that you hope that he cleans that stuff up, but sometimes you might just have to live with the mistakes like that. And then, you know, I think the pocket footwork and the progression stuff is getting better. You know, one of the big knocks on him while he was at North Dakota State was this was a guy that would sometimes lock on to that first receiver, that primary read, and just would not come off of it. And he got knocked for that. But I think, you know, when you look at it in context, he was playing with a team where 9 times out of 10, most games, they were the better team. And so he could stare at his primary read until it came open because he knew it was probably going to come open. You know, and that was sort of his job. If, you know, you're supposed to throw the like comeback route to the right, if that's your first read and you know it's going to be open, well, then look at it. Wait for it to come open. Throw it. Like, that was kind of his job, but it didn't sort of look like this was a guy that could get through progression reads. We're starting to see more of that now where he's speeding up his process. And like I mentioned, Benjamin, as this Washington game went on, it seemed like he sped up his process and started to get through progression reads better. But that's still a question mark with him as well.
Absolutely. And that's definitely, I would say, the biggest preseason difference I saw. You know, just my first live looks at him was his ability to move from a first read to a second read, to move some defenders with his eyes, which, given his arm strength, the velocity he can generate in the intermediate level, he doesn't need too much of a window. You know, he can sling the ball in there when he doesn't necessarily move defenders around. But you can see that mental game is increasing for him, that it's growing. And that's really a wonderful thing. So, last question for you then, Mark, and this is the big one. I'm gonna stick you to this, and you're gonna be responsible for your answer come week 17. But we're looking at the way Carson Wentz is currently playing. You know what you think you'll see from him for year two. You know, the Eagles are a fringe playoff team. They're in some playoff projections. They're not in others. The NFC East is wide open, man. It's really unsure who's going to take that division. It's one of the tightest ones in the NFL, if not the tightest one. So what you've seen from Carson so far, and, you know, knowing what you do about the rest of the Eagles' pieces on defense, you know, the weapons that he has, can Carson Wentz lead this team to a playoff berth or a playoff win? What are you thinking?
I think he can do both. And I think we're going to get a nice little sense of what this team consists of and where Carson is in his development. I think we're going to get a nice little sense over sort of the next 3 weeks. You've got this trip to Kansas City. Arrowhead is an absolutely almost impossible environment to play in. You know, teams have gone down there and just gotten destroyed. You know, when, you know, you look at the Patriots back in 2014, that Monday night debacle. I mean, things can go haywire fast when you play at Arrowhead. It's a tough environment. So we get a good sense of, you know, where this offense is, where Carson is in his development. That looks to be a very good defense that can get after the quarterback. Then you've got their home, at home opener against the Giants. Giants obviously dropped their opening night game, question marks on offense, but still I think a pretty good defense. And then they go out west to the Chargers against a team that they didn't pull off that comeback win last night. But they can get after the quarterback. They can force some turnovers. And so this is a nice little three-game stretch where we're going to see, you know, where this offense really is, where Carson really is in his development. They come out of this 2-1. I mean, man, then it really sets up well because you've got Arizona, which looks like they're having a bit of a down year. Carolina, still some question marks there on offense. You know, they get Washington again at home. You get the 49ers at home. You get Denver coming east at home. I mean, so if they come out of this next three-game stretch with a 2-1 record, which I think they can do, that really sets up nicely for them to have a nice little run to get them into November and sort of maybe even in the driver's seat of that NFC East. And so I think when you know, obviously – cautious optimism has been the two-word phrase I've told anybody that's asked me about Wentz this year. I've said, look, I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to see the Carson Wentz we hoped to see last year when he came out of North Dakota State. Nothing I saw against Washington has me moving off of that. I'm still very cautious about it, but I'm still very optimistic, getting more optimistic now about Carson Wentz right now. So get through that three-game stretch, come out of that like 2-1. I think you might see a team make a nice little run here into the playoffs.
All right, you heard it here from Mark Schofield. Wild optimism, unbridled optimism, just, you know.
There we go. Since I am in the DC area, I will use a phrase from the great Tony Kornheiser. Mark Schofield, the era of unbridled optimism is here with the Philadelphia Eagles.
I love it.
How about that?
Go crazy, Philadelphia Eagles fans. Playoff berth is incoming. Mark, my man, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure having you on. Do me a favor. Tell the listeners where they can find all of your stuff.
In the backyard looking at my farm. No. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Usually Twitter and all my stuff over there. Do work over at Inside the Pylon, obviously, where I cover quarterbacks. I cover the Big Ten as well. I'm doing some work, speaking of the Big Ten, for the Minnesota Rivals website. If you like the Gophers, if you don't like the Gophers, if you hate the Gophers, whatever, you can read my stuff over there where I break down some scheme stuff. NFL 1000 Bleacher Report with Doug Farrar. He and I are breaking down the quarterbacks each week. Those quarterback rankings are probably dropping soon. I just want to caution people before you send me the angry hate tweets. These are not solely week to week. We are taking a more holistic approach, more like power rankings. So if you look at them and you say, wait, why isn't Carson Wentz quarterback one? Or why isn't Alex Smith quarterback number one? That will move. Guys will move up, but we're going to take a sort of slow approach to it. No wild knee-jerk reactions, because frankly, if we had Jared Goff quarterback one this week, people would have gotten mad. So check that out as well. And as Benjamin mentioned, Locked On Patriots. If you ever feel like you want to listen to me blather on about the Patriots with my Boston accent, you can listen to that as well.
All right. Well, either way, Mark is a prime follow. You got to be following his stuff. I can't speak enough about how many of his resources have helped me out as I've been learning about quarterbacks and learning about all the scheme stuff that they do at Inside the Pylon. So a big thank you to Mark again, my man. I really appreciate you hopping on.
Thank you so much, Benjamin. You and Michael are crushing it. We gave Michael a little bit of stick at the beginning, but he's a good dude too. So yeah, you guys keep crushing it, man. Love this show.
All right. Well, either way, thank you so much for listening to Locked On Eagles. We'll be having a Locked On Chiefs crossover on Wednesday, talking about what to expect from that game. But in order to hear that, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.